Hey guys, welcome back. This is Josh JCL Felto for The Writer's Lens. And if you were tuning in last week for my last episode, it was a little bit of a break or a breather in this series that I've been up to with this this launch series I've been doing for my podcast, where I was just basically talking about my progress, what I've been up to lately, and giving a little bit of a pat on my back for claiming that I was going to hopefully start doing a podcast this summer. And hey, that's what I'm doing now. So thanks for tuning in and being a part of this. But today, I'm getting back on track with a topic that continuously comes up in the environment of creatives and aspiring authors, which is about goal setting for writing a book. And then once you write the book and it's done, it's completed, it's like, now what? What am I supposed to do? You know, I've completed this thing. What am I supposed to do with it? So along the lines of what I've been talking about over the last few weeks, been talking about passion, pursuing passion, working really hard at it, and ultimately dealing with rejection. But all those things combined leading up to reaching the ultimate goal of finishing your book and trying to get it out to the masses. Now what? What do you do? And I can tell from personal experience that it's not the easiest road to get back on once you've actually achieved your goal. For instance, a lot of people, once they reach the goal, specifically talking about writing a story, may say, great, you know, bask in it and say, this is all I ever wanted to do with it. I wanted to complete it. And this was very therapeutic for me. I'm done. Well, others might say, wow, you know, what a great work I've done, but you know, I need a breather. That took about a good, you know, 1 year, 2 year, in some cases, 10 years of my life to finish this thing. I need a break. You know, I'm not going to do anything else with this book or this story. While other people might do a fine job of telling all their friends, you know, going around saying, hey, you got to check this thing out. That's kind of where I was actually in my first few ventures. But most people will set another goal and go for it. So, you know, I've finished this book of mine, and you know what? I want to write another one. Let's just barrel into the next series of stories that I want to do. But I'll tell you that this is something that I have struggled with as an author, perhaps more than anything else. I feel like I've always been rather disciplined in terms of my approach to writing stories, outlining stories. It's not that I'm a spontaneous idea generator by any means, but if I have a good idea, if I have something that I want to work on, I'm fairly good at writing it down, repeating it, putting it into the big spreadsheet that I keep all my material with, or you know, on Google Drive or Evernote or whatever it is that I'm using. And I've always been really good at coming up with the idea, starting to execute it, and then having the discipline to bring it to completion. I've never really had a big issue with that. So thankfully, I've been able to learn how to acquire those disciplines to finish work that I start, specifically when it comes to telling stories. But what I do after that is the one thing that I always struggle with the most, and that is marketing the thing. Like, just marketing my story has always been a big road bump for me. I mean, it's almost as if like I'm coming to the end of the road and there's a fork, and the one side looks like, hey, write another story, you know, that you know how to do that. And the other side says, there's no way of knowing if there's an outlet here. There's no way of knowing if this is a dead end, but you have to do this. And I go, you know, I'm not so sure if I want to go down that road. But this is where so many writers in the 21st century now have to go. You just have to go to this place. You have to figure out what you're going to do with your story once you finished it. And this is bigger than just, I'll write a letter and send it off to a couple agents, which I've talked about in other episodes. And it's bigger than, I'm just going to go down to the local bookstore and say, hey, I have this book. Can I sell it on your shelves? Which most of them will say, get the heck out of here. You're not allowed to be in here and solicit, okay? Unless they're mom and pop down the street or something, which I've had some fairly good success with. But you have to have kind of this multitasking mentality of, yeah, I'm writing the story. I'm going to finish it, but I need to have a bigger picture in mind. What am I going to do with this? What after this is all said and done, what am I going to do with it? Because as a writer, I mean, your primary task ultimately is finishing your story. I mean, you want to be able to finish what you start, be it you're a fly by the seat of your pants kind of person, where you're writing, you have no idea where it's going, it's an adventure for you, you're a pantser. I think this term was coined by Jerry Jenkins, is that you're a pantser. And then there's other people who are outliners that they will create a very elaborate outline. If you recall back from your high school, college days, I know some of you listening are in college still or just starting out or perhaps are still in high school. So you know what an outline looks like. It's those big Roman numerals followed by more Roman numerals and then the big A, little A, and so on and so forth. People will do that for their stories, and they will build off of that outline so they have a clear idea of how to finish their story by sticking to the outline. I'm a little bit in between. I mean, if I have to give a little bit of self, some transparency there, I'm a little bit in between. I like to outline, but I also like the adventure of, I don't know where this is going. You know, I start a story with a character, and I have an idea of where I want it to end up, but I don't want to map out everything. I want to start writing it and see where it goes from there. So sometimes I'm a little bit in between, but I think on the whole, I'm more of an outliner than anything else. But the thing is, though, as I'm doing that, as I'm outlining, as I'm coming up with where I'm going with my stories, I'm not always thinking about the best avenues to get my idea out after it's said and done. And like I was saying, in this age of social media, you have to be thinking about these things. You just have to be. If you're entrepreneurial about your work, if you really are really believe in your work, which I had talked about, you know, if this is your passion, if this is something you're willing to suffer for the sake of a greater reward, you should be thinking about this and not just long term, but just sort of the bigger picture. Okay, I finished this story, then what? What am I supposed to do with this thing? I mean, what are my resources? And thankfully, you know, living in America, you have a plethora of resources. I mean, the internet, access to social media accounts for free. There's coaches that are available online to help you get through these processes. Editors or can be a dime a dozen depending on who you get referred to. But you have to have this larger picture in mind as to what am I going to do with this thing once I get done with it. And it doesn't matter how great your idea is. I think this is something else too that I've really learned going through the process of writing and telling story, because no matter how great your idea is, if you don't have a good avenue or an outlet, no one's going to know about it. I mean, they're just not going to. I mean, if you think about maybe some of the first stories that were, you know, written as far as Lord of the Rings, the first big fantasy stories that were written in the early 20th century, unless Tolkien was able to get his work in the hands of somebody that could publish it for him on a mass scale, would people have really taken him seriously? Oh, wow, a story about elves and, you know, there's a demonic force of orcs or whatever. Yeah, that's not going to happen, right? But to get it in the right hands, to get it into people that are going to believe in it as much as you do, this has to be on your mind, okay? It has to be on your mind, no matter how great your idea is. And even though I may have thought that my first few ideas were absolutely spectacular, even though my Epiphanies theories and Downright Good Thought books I thought were the bee's knees, it didn't matter how great they were unless I was thinking about how I was going to get them into the hands of my audience. And honestly, I wasn't thinking about that. I was so focused on my story that I wasn't thinking broadly enough. I just wasn't thinking, okay, well, you know, after this is done, what am I going to do with it? So one of the things that I've had to do since I started this whole writing gig was basically go out and do some research and find out what are some of the best ways to get people interested in your work. Now, granted, one of the things that I've adopted and read about a lot is Donald Miller, who I've mentioned a couple of times because I follow a lot of his stuff. He's the CEO of StoryBrand. He has this terminology where he calls turning browsers into buyers. And this is so true in the world of the internet and social media days. I mean, come on. Anytime I hear someone say, hey, have you ever heard of this product? I know so many people that immediately the first thing they do is they go to Amazon.com and they check out the ratings. They check out the reviews, right? You know, they type it in and they say, oh man, this thing's 450 reviews and they're mostly 5 stars. Absolutely, I'm going to buy this thing. Absolutely. But if you were to go online and you might see 2 reviews or 3, and maybe one of them's a 2-star, you might reconsider what you're doing. I mean, it's not the same as walking into a store and going up to down the aisle 7 or whatever, and you have your pick of the litter of whatever it is you're trying to buy. If you're buying something online and someone's recommended it to you, you want to know what other people have thought of it first. All right, it's not the same as going out and buying, you know, Raisin Bran, just because you've known Raisin Bran your whole life or whatever. So, but there are avenues to do this. There are opportunities to go out there And there are coaches out there too. Tim Grawl has a website called Book Launch where he basically tries to help people get up off their feet after they finished a story to say, hey, are you thinking about creating email lists? Have you considered telling your friends to share your work online? Have you considered, you know, perhaps getting a professional editor and, you know, not just, you know, Susie Smith's editing services, you know, down the street, even if they're LLC or something like that. Have you thought about these other things that are going to make your work, you know, far more presentable and as well, you know, get into the hands of other folks who may have never even heard about you? But as I'm just kind of running through these things almost at a shotgun pace, this is, of course, really, really hard. All right. This is not a simple thing to do. You know, as a, I would like to think as a creative person or as a creative writer, you may have certain talents for things or you have certain skill sets that you're really, you're good at, you're already adept at doing. So for instance, I would think as a creative writer, you like writing. So you're good at writing or you're good at creating content. But marketing yourself on the other side of that is an absolute struggle. It could be an absolute struggle because some of the greatest writers could be so skittish in front of people that they don't know how to market themselves. And again, you know, I've repeated this a few times, but it bears being said again, is that in today's age, you have to know how to market yourself better. It's, if you're going to be a self-published author, okay, if you're going to be a self-published writer and you're going to be a do-it-yourselfer, you have to be someone that is willing to market yourself as much as you market your product. It's just the way that it is. And to do those things, if you're someone that enjoys writing, but you're more of a Henry David Thoreau type, which if you Google that image right now, which it's like the stereotypical image of a writer. It's a guy with a long beard who hangs out in a cabin all day. I mean, probably the modern day Thoreau might be George R. R. Martin, who's you know, the author of the Song of Fire and Ice, or better known as the Game of Thrones series, who hangs out in his shack somewhere in I think he's in Ireland or Scotland or somewhere. But he does that. You know, he looks like a writer. Okay, he looks like a writer. He doesn't look like somebody who would present himself as marketing himself necessarily. His work speaks for him. But he also has a great publicist. He's got a great publisher. He's got people working on his behalf. But if you're going to be someone that's a do-it-yourselfer and you're going to market yourself, you got to be willing to be able to channel this struggle, this dichotomy of not only writing great content, but learning how, you know, how to market yourself. And this is also where I feel like I felt initially I was very handicapped because I wasn't really good at knowing how to market myself. So for instance, this podcast, which is something I've had a lot of fun with, but it's ultimately a tool as well to kind of get the word out to a larger audience, you know, people who are more audio or someone who'd be more apt to say, yeah, I'll check out a podcast. I'm not going to read his blog because I don't want to sit down and read a blog about your story or whatever, but I'll listen to it, you know, in the car or wherever I'm driving. And that was something I had to make a decision about and do, which was new for me, but enjoyable now as well, as much as it is challenging. But it's also really good in many ways. And it's not, and I'm not going to use the angle of it's good for self fulfillment or self refining and things like that. There's just certain things you're always going to be more comfortable with doing than others. But in terms of the market itself, so who you're up against, if you're self-published and you're trying to get the word out about your book, this process really does weed out a lot of people who are A, one and doneers, you know, people who are just going to write one book and they're done. Okay, so they might market themselves and they'll be, you know, done in a year or two after the steam is over with. It will weed out those who really aren't committed to their craft. So anyone that, you know, wants to be a writer who thinks they ought to be an author, well, maybe after a few years of disappointments or perhaps not really gaining traction that they wanted, they'll fizzle out, you know, and they won't be part of the saturation that's out there of people actually trying to make it as writers. Or perhaps it'll weed out those who just aren't going to last the race, which kind of goes hand in hand with the first part. But for those that maybe write two or three books and just say, you know what, I've had enough of this. I don't want to do this anymore. And ultimately, this will give more opportunity to those who are persistent. Now, so to those who are willing to go the long an extra mile, to those who are not just one and doneers or flash in the pans or whatever, These are the folks that are really trying to hone their craft and get better. And it gives that opportunity to those who are trying in their earnest to observe and see the mistakes of others, so that if I watch someone else falter, that may sound selfish or whatnot, but if I see how another person has not done well with something and I really want to do better, I'll see that. And I'll say, you know what, that's something for me to avoid. For instance, I think probably the one thing I've tried to avoid like the plague is bad book covers. Okay, I think I have like one short story out there right now called Spirit Run, which is like a generic Amazon cover. And I did this well over a year ago. And I really just want to pull the cover from the book. I like the story, but I look at that cover and I just go, that has nothing to do with my story whatsoever. That's just not good. So maybe I will change that at some point. But I've tried to stay away from just bad book covers because I've seen people who just have terrible book covers. And as much as the old adage is you don't judge a book by its cover, you do. You absolutely do. Every person does. I mean, if I'm walking through the bookstore at Barnes & Noble and I'm walking around and I pick up a book cover and it's really enticing, I'm going to try and see what it's about. But if I pick up a book title that I've never seen before and it's just some drab, just maybe it's an Arial or Times New Roman and there's nothing really special about it, and maybe the back paragraph is just kind of misleading, I'm going to put that down. I'm not really going to be interested to read it. I just won't be. And I think that most people are visual in that category, and you need something that's eye-catching, which is why I had a friend of mine help me with my last two book covers, actually, for The Scientist's Dilemma and The Road to Mars, to do something a little more professional looking, something that actually is eye-catching and relates to the story itself. So it's not just my name on the front and somebody, you know, drawing that I did in my garage that looks nothing like it should. So, but this is what it gives us an opportunity for, is to grow and increase our skill sets. And for me personally, facing that fear of putting myself out there and not being afraid to do that. So as I had said before, I had always had a fear of putting myself out there when I was doing my first couple books, because I really wasn't behind them. I didn't want myself to be associated necessarily with a failure like Epiphany's Theories and Downright Good Thoughts. I wasn't someone that wanted to be associated with it if it was going to be a failure. And to me, I don't think it's a failure in hindsight. I do think that it was a learning experience for myself. But I look back on it and I go, yeah, you know, I never wanted to own that stuff. I never did. And I never wanted to put myself out there completely. I may be on the cover of both books and my picture might be on the back, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I wanted to own it and really make it fly. But getting back to, again, the crux of everything that I've been talking about with this particular episode is marketing yourself and selling your stories. It can be a varied process, and a lot of what you end up doing can be defined by what you define as being success, which is not something that you may even think about while you're writing your story. Is how am I going to define what I'm doing as being successful? And I find this to be something that I do have to ask myself from time to time. Not so much is this such a good story, but how am I going to define success once I am done with my story? I want to market it. I want people to know about it. Like, what are the metrics that I'm going on? And this can be a little bit relative. This can be a bit of a subjective thing, because everybody may have different versions of success. I hate saying that it's a relative thing, but it kind of is. You know, if your ultimate goal is to write a book or write a story and get it into the hands of your cousins and your aunts and your uncles and them to enjoy it, then boom, you're a success. You have achieved your goal. But if you're someone that sets really unrealistic goals and says, I'm going to write this book and I'm going to sell 1 million copies in a month and nobody knows who I am yet, then I'd have to tell you, you need to set some more realistic goals. Okay, just not saying that it can't be done, but the odds are against you. The odds are not in your favor, as they would say, or the odds ever be. You get what I'm saying if you've seen The Hunger Games. But beside that point, having some kind of definition of success and having a goal in mind when it comes to what success should look like also helps as well. I mean, it's a huge, huge thing, because so many times I know as a writer, when I've released a book, I have a tendency to track my sales rankings. I have a tendency to track people that are writing into me and saying things like, hey, Josh, read your book, thought it was really great, or, you know, thought it was total crap, and, you know, this was what I liked, or this is what I didn't like. And mentally, I make notes of, well, that's one, that's two, that's three, that's four, you know, I got another review today, oh, wow, you know, I'm doing great, or I made a couple more sales today, I'm doing great. And having no sense of, well, what was my actual goal? What was my metric that I was trying to apply to this after I'd read my book and I'm now selling it? What is success going to look like to me? Is it basically it took me $50 to get this book published, and if I make 55, then I'm a success, right? Like what are my definitions of success? And many times, again, like I said, you tend to gloss over this when you're kind of in that tunnel vision of I have to write my story, I'm getting it done. But I think most people would argue that if you're writing a book, success to you means I'm making enough money to pay the bills. And that's really where most people want to be if they really do want to be full-time writers. They want to be able to pay their bills. They want to be able to do things with the money that they make from their story and to have an impact on someone else in a way that person goes, wow, your story really spoke to me, or it was really good and I couldn't put it down, or I wanted to read it a couple times. I told a couple friends about it, or a few friends or my relatives, and they picked it up and they thought it was grand. Those are the things that I think the true writer, the true author wants to hear so badly and wants to experience in the midst of everything else that's going on. And that can be your definition of success. That can be, now I've finished my book, I want this to happen. I want this to be something that I'm looking forward to, or I'm working towards. And it doesn't have to be, I sell 100 books in 100 days or whatever that is. You can have those goals. I think that's very healthy, because then you have something to really work yourself towards and to challenge yourself that, well, what can I do? You know, what can I do to market myself better? Do I have a presence on Instagram? Do I have a presence on LinkedIn or Facebook? Or do I have friends that could help me out and share my material and kind of blanket the, you know, the internet waves a little bit more? Should I be going down to local bookstores and talking to people? It really makes you brainstorm a bit. And it also makes you want to, you know, go talk to some people and say, well, how did you end up becoming successful? An older gentleman that I work with had once told me that in order to be successful, you have to emulate the success of another person. So you have to learn, how did this person become successful in the first place? And that's very true. And one of the best ways to do that as a writer is to look at other people who have, quote unquote, made it. Not that I agree with the term making it. I really don't believe in that necessarily, because I think everyone has their tipping point and gets to a point where they can be, I don't know, semi-famous for their work, but they always have to reprove themselves. I mean, you always have to prove yourself again and again in order to, quote unquote, make it. You know, just because you wrote one really good book doesn't mean you're going to write 10 more. I mean, you have to continuously prove yourself over and over again. And that's the same with professional athletes. You know, you could have one great year, come back next year and stink. You still have to prove yourself. So making it is not something that I like to keep in my mind as a bar for success. I don't see that as being something that I want to keep in my mind as a goal off in the distance to be successful. I just don't want that. But what I do want to do is have some sort of metric. I want to be able to track some things. I want to be able to say that I was able to get, you know, X number of sales on my second book, which is better than my first book, you know, to get in the hands of more people, to have more hits on my podcast, to have more people trafficking into my blog, so that I then can look at it and say, okay, this is working or this is not working. And then I can start saying, okay, this is successful, this is working, this is not. And to experiment and just keep experimenting. I mean, that's probably my biggest bit of advice as well when it comes to marketing yourself after you've written your story, is to just keep experimenting with things and ideas in order to get the word out with what you do. I would say that my aunt, who is a writer as well, and I'm hoping to have on this podcast at some point, she writes children's books, and she was a teacher for 37 years in the Pittsburgh Allegheny system. And she wrote a book called Grady Gets Glasses. And she got this little stuffed figurine, I don't want to say figurine, but it was like a little doll of Grady. And he's a bunny rabbit and he has glasses. And she takes this thing everywhere and takes pictures of it in the craziest places. I mean, she's been all over the U.S. now. And she takes pictures with random strangers with Grady. and posts on her Instagram or Facebook and gets all kinds of like reactions from people. And I just think it's brilliant. So Dee Dee, if you're listening, I think it's a great thing that you're doing there with Grady. And the story is great too. Our little guy does read Grady gets glasses every now and again. So, but again, talking and just summarizing a bit on this concept of, I finished my story. Now what? Setting goals for yourself, having a larger picture of what do you want to do with your story once you're done with it. It's absolutely imperative to have these kinds of thoughts, especially, like I said, in today's market, in social media land, you should be having these thoughts. And also having some kind of definition of success, some kind of metric that you can go with, that you're not just throwing something against the wall hoping it sticks. Because if you do that, it's a very fickle way of trying to define success for yourself. And you're going to be constantly stuck in this sort of purgatory of, am I doing it right? Am I not doing it right? No, just keep experimenting and then start making those metrics for yourself. So anyway, stay encouraged on in that regard, guys. And I just, again, just want to thank you for tuning in on The Writer's Lens. Got some exciting things coming up over the next couple weeks, which you'll have to be tuning in during the week when I get my weekly updates. But again, just want to thank you guys for tuning in on this podcast adventure alongside with me. And looking forward to checking in with you again next week. Until then, this is Josh JCL Felto for The Writer's Lens.